listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko Torres, only on LA Talk Radio.
Hey guys, happy Tuesday. A little dreary out today, but I'm quite sure everyone is plugged in and listening. We got some good things to talk about today. Good things and some sad things. You know, it's been trouble over the weekend in Philadelphia. And the very hard part is losing a loved one. And when you lose a loved one, it's never, ever a good thing. And the bad thing about it is, you know, sometimes people don't know how to stay out of the way of toxic situations. Just because it's toxic doesn't necessarily mean male and female. It could be male and male. And unfortunately, for this gentleman who was a part of the boxing community, his name is Japan Jackson. He actually lost his life to a foolish act of gun violence. And, you know, it's sad to say that, you know, these times today are very hard for people losing loved ones over frivolous crimes out here today. And I didn't want this to tarnish the boxing community because I know that the boxing community does so much for the youth, and they actually spend a lot of time with these kids out here today. And not to take away from Japan Jackson, you know, from all the good things that he did, but to, you know, leave a lasting impression. You know, Mr. Jackson didn't know that that one mistake he could have made could have ended his life, which it did. He didn't think it was going to go down like that. And then, you know, it was a lot of media talk about they thought he was the victim in the beginning. And he was truly a victim because he was put into a bad decision-making choice of my life or his life. And in the end, he lost his own life. Just a very sad thing, you know, when you are in a community of people that show you love and, you know, share the love with the children and do so much for the children. It's just sad to see that it has to come to sometimes these things of making a decision of getting out of the jungle, basically. And it's very hard sometimes, you know, because you hear a lot of gossip and you hear a lot of talk about what he could have, should have did, you know, but in the heat of the moment, you know, because I saw a news article with some video footage that was sent over to me. So the police immediately wanted to clear up, like, okay, he's a boxer, but, you know, he got himself in a situation because he's actually the one that pulled the trigger first. But see, this is the problem that I have. Video sometimes doesn't show you everything. And I'm going to just say that from experience, because I have seen footage. There's been accusations against others that throughout my course of employment, I've seen footage. I've heard stories. I've read statements. And when you get down to the bottom of it, sometimes the video is not what was actually, you know, done. It's very misleading sometimes. Unless you have clear footage, we don't have all the pieces to the puzzle. There's just little clips running around town. We don't know if this guy actually pulled out his weapon and was the aggressor against Japan Jackson. We don't know that. All we know is this man said, I have to make an executive decision if I'm going to save my own life or die in the midst of doing it. So people don't take time out to think about, you know, what really happened. Everybody is so quick to push the button of blame and, oh, he was the bad guy. He was the original shooter. He shot first. But we don't see the footage of what happened prior to the event. Here it is. Japan Jackson was a boxing coach. He coached the kids. He was a pro fighter. you know, you don't know what took place, because usually when people are in the boxing world, very slim do they have a gun and say, you know, I'm going to retaliate in this manner. And it's very hard sometimes when you see that, especially on the news and other outlets that want to paint the picture of, you know, this guy was really, he was a bad guy. So the bad guy got, you know, got himself in trouble. And now he's no longer here because of the mistake he made. Instead of having the thought of, did this guy save his life? Or what initiated the actual argument between these gentlemen? And usually if anybody knows boxers and boxing coaches, they would know that they are some of the mildest mannered people, you know, until you push their buttons, because everybody has a trigger. You know, don't push the button, you know, it's going to trigger a reaction and you won't get it. But who's to even say that alcohol didn't play a part in this big dispute of anger at the time? So, you know, a lot of innocent people got hurt out there that day. And unfortunately, yes, Japan was a shooter at that particular time. So was the other gentleman. He also had a weapon. And there was, you know, some other people of interest that they're still looking for to get the whole story of what really happened and how they can put the pieces of the puzzle together for the people in that community. What I don't understand is, you know, people are speaking out, and it's very sad to say that people are not sticking together to request answers of what really happened that day. You know, I'm surprised the family hasn't stepped up to the media and said, hold it. You're bad mouthing my family member. You have no idea what truly happened that day. And issue a cease and desist order and to shut them down. Because you can't run around scandalizing someone's image who's worked hard in the community. You know, yes, something bad happened. But where do you go from here? Do you tarnish the guy that was trying to save his own life, but he didn't? You know, and no one's taken into consideration, this fight broke out with hundreds of people walking up and down South Street. I went out there actually to just take a look and just to see the scene, you know, just so I would know exactly what really could have transpired here. And I tell you what, whoever was doing the shooting, there was some really big guns out there. And if it was only 11 people that got shot, and I'm not saying that's a good thing with three deceased, I'm saying there needs to be better gun control. You know, someone just told me recently that, you know, someone was utilizing people from, you know, Kensington Avenue, that crowd of people who don't have criminal records, as straw buyers for guns. So people need to have better gun control in the city. Because first of all, if the person looks like they're doing anything suspicious as far as narcotics, that should be the ultimate no-no of issuing a gun permit, you know, a carry conceal. You shouldn't be issuing those people a gun at all. But unfortunately, it's the mighty dollar that plays a big part in today's society that will get that gun store owner to say, well, the record came clean, so why not sell them a gun? And what do? They take it and they sell it. So now you have a untraceable weapon that was purchased, okay, serial numbers removed, and you have no idea where it came from. So there needs to be better gun control in Philadelphia, as well as some other states that are careless with how they allow people to make purchases. You know, I don't think that a person should be able to walk into a gun store and just because you pass a clean background check, I don't think that qualifies in my eyes, you know, of being qualified to say I can legally own a weapon that can harm somebody, you know, and this may have well been the case as well, because I haven't heard any news outlet, and they're usually the ones to put your business out in the street. I haven't heard anyone say about any permits. Well, he was licensed to carry. We found four weapons. The guns were registered to XYZ. We haven't heard any of that. But we've heard a lot of negativity of stuff. So it makes you kind of wonder, where did the gun come from in the first place? And I'm just curious to find out. You know, and I know a lot of people want to know, besides myself, you know, how was this able to happen? And then you have a Roots picnic, you know, concert in Philadelphia. Now, if this is traditional habit to go to South Street after the concert or picnic or whatever they do in Philadelphia, okay, if this is like a force of habit, I hate to kick dirt on people, but shouldn't you have ample amount of police that are positioned, you know, undercovers, anybody to come in within law enforcement to say, we're going to take on this block and we're going to babysit it, because that's all it is. You're babysitting grown adults that don't know how to behave. Okay, that's really what it is. So it's kind of crazy that there wasn't even enough police support for thousands of people who roam this neighborhood. Okay, mind you, Tuesday before this event, they had another shooting there, one block up. So wouldn't it tell you like, hey, listen, we need to have extra patrol cars. We need to make sure the community is safe. And had the community really been safe, Japan would have been here today, okay? Because there would have been an officer by Rita's Ice that was just hanging out there, because that's usually the hangout. And he would say, guys, knock it off. Go home or go to jail. You know, they would have had options at that point. There would have been no gun reaching. There's police around. What are you reaching for a gun for? So you can get gunned down for doing nothing but reaching in your waistband? So people need to think about that. There was some lady that came on the news and said people need to stand up for the community. There's murders in every community. I mean, people are not standing up. They're being very quiet. You know, I have a friend of mine that lost her son to gun violence, similar to Japan's. Frivolous situation. And it's very sad to say, now he leaves behind a family that's suffering because of a foolish act that should have never taken place. Something similar, concert, afterwards, thousands of people, no officers, law enforcement around to direct the traffic. You got all these people and you have no one directing anybody to do anything. And I'm very surprised that more people didn't get hurt there, because, you know, you got bullets flying all over the place. And from what I've seen, those windows had some very big holes. And I mean, they were on point, on center. So that told me these people were dealing with some big guns. And that's just guns that they haven't even mentioned yet. You know, someone says, yeah, they had a AK, they had a Ruger, they had a, you know, whatever, they had a Glock. Then eyebrows start going up because it's certain details that haven't been revealed as of yet on this case. So if you're saying certain things, people are going to wonder, how do you know that? So you must have been a part of the clique and you can get yourself into trouble. But as far as the boxing community goes, you know, it's just sad to say that some people will look at this as a tarnish to the community, you know, and it's very sad because you lost a good person. I'm quite sure his manager lost a great fighter. From my understanding, it's another gentleman who's a boxer still fighting for his life. So it kind of makes you wonder what really happened there, you know, that the two couldn't get along. Someone sent a message that maybe the officer that normally patrols South Street were positioned for crowd control at the Roots picnic. That may very well be true. But the picnic was over. And people should have at least, you know, you see a fight breaking out. Because there was some time in between where someone could have dialed 911. There's a fight breaking out. This fight didn't just start right there, you know, as the media wants you to see. This is what happened right here. You know, don't be so quick to pass judgment on a situation unless you were there to actually see it for yourself. And I give a special shout out to the family of Mr. Jackson and all the other victims that lost their lives to this senseless crime that should have never happened. Usually in the boxing community, they come together, they join forces, and they figure out how they can create an executive plan for troubled teens, single dads, children that need a little bit of aggression that, you know, in school they won't be bullied. So, you know, the boxing community does a lot for these kids. And to see the image tarnished because of one act, because you know, today people are so social, you know, and they stereotype every situation. And what's good for them becomes bad for them. And instead of them stepping up to the plate and saying, I want to make a change because I want to see something happen into my community with these children, you know, conflict resolution is really what's all about. There has to be some type of agency. I know they got a lot of, you know, nonprofits that are really just what they are, you know, some money game. It's not really to help anybody but themselves. So it's kind of sad to see when you have that type of organization that does not get the support that's needed from the community and from the politicians. You know, they don't get the support that's needed because there's programs for these kids that they could very well get into if the funding wasn't allocated to salaries. If it was allocated to individuals, I think you would see more of a success story for a young teen that's out there, you know, wandering the streets, run away from the DHS CUA system. You would see more of those children involved. You know, they have some funding for it, but at the end of the day, who knows what they truly do with it? Because these kids would have more to do. A parent had told me that her son just got a summer job in Philadelphia. And she said, well, they gave him $150 so he would sign up, you know, to stay out of the streets and just get a summer job. $150 with gas at $5 or more a gallon. I mean, what is this kid going to do with that? I mean, you're buying anything today, it's so expensive. But I guess through their administrative fees, they had to cut a budget after that. And then that left them in a position where they had to basically, you know, say, this is what we can allocate to each kid, because if not, you know, we'll have a bunch of teenagers running around like wild hyenas for the summertime. And they don't want that. They don't want that to happen at all. It's just a very sad thing that, you know, parents have to accept some of the responsibility of what's going on. You know, because you have to take responsibility for your children. And hopefully people can adapt to what that means. Because some people take their kids, they drop them off. They don't even ask, like, how's your session? How did it go? You know, as I said before on a previous show, parents have to be more involved in their children's everyday life. It's so important because you don't want them to make big mistakes. They're going to make mistakes. They're going to be who they are, okay? But the big mistakes, you want to kind of keep them away from it because then they'll end up with a criminal record. They can't get, you know, a decent job. They're scrambling. They're fiddling around. And then, you know, you're stuck with taking care of a grown adult. And who wants to take care of a grown adult? You know, I always tell people, treat your children like, you know, the animals on Animal Planet. You groom them. You ever see that? Where the deers, you know, they take them out. They show them how to hunt for food. And then eventually, this deer is on their own. And unfortunately, sometimes they never see their parents again. So you have to give your children some responsibility of what they need to do going forward in life, because they're not always going to have a good parent to guide them. They're going to have people outside telling them what they need to do and how they need to do it. But if they're already groomed, they're going to say, no, I can't do that because that's not going to be acceptable to my parent or parents. You know, that's where the line of respect comes in at. You know, you got some kids that talk back and say little shenanigans stuff. That's all a part of being, you know, mature and growing up. Because when you get into your 50s or 60s, you know, your kid somehow comes back home and, like, they want to visit you and they want to do things with you. It's all about maturity with these kids nowadays. And we don't give them enough room to be mature is the hard part. And when you don't do that, sometimes things could come back to haunt you. You know, like it's some parents that will let the kid live at home until he's 45. You know, he's eating all the food. He's not washing his socks. You got stinky socks in the house. You have food bowls under the bed. You've got a grown child that is still a kid in your home, sharing your space. And before you know it, you've created a horrible, horrible person that you can't even live with. And then you're saying to yourself, as a parent, where did I go wrong? Sometimes you have to let your kid grow and understand that this is called adulthood. You know, you want a car, you have to save your money, and you have to buy yourself a car. You know, you have to go get a job. And fortunately for them, if they don't have children or a household to maintain that is over, you know, over their budget, hopefully they can succeed with just working hard, having things in life, and moving forward. You know, hey guys, I got a Hall of Famer, Dewdrop Boxing Gym out of Newark, New Jersey. I brought him on because I got some questions for him. Hey there, Mr. Dewdrop, how are you today?
Ah, fine. Working.
We could barely hear you. Can you turn your phone up a little bit?
Okay. You hear me now? Is good?
I can hear you now. Yes. Okay. I wanted to talk to you about Greg Japan Jackson, this incident that just happened in Philadelphia over the weekend. Okay. And I wanted to talk about what kind of shock has it given to the boxing community?
Well, it's mixed emotions because if you in a life that's going to put yourself in position to be around those type of people, you know, to my understanding, my little research, he's a good guy. So I could say nothing bad about the guy, but if he's in the wrong place at the wrong time, those things happen. But look what can he do? You know, live and let live, but I have a clue what happened, the way it happened, you know. I'm not used to that. As far as the boxing team.
How do you feel about the media trying to paint this boxer as like some gun-toting villain that he's just a hothead, he's out here, you know, doing craziness? How do you feel that the media would paint someone who's around a lot of kids, who's a pro boxer? Like, how do you feel about that?
Well, I feel about the investors of that area that he lives in. You know, if you live in a society where you have to carry a gun, and Pennsylvania is one of the states that you have open carry, and a lot of people have guns. I know school teachers carry guns. I know lawyers just carry guns. Especially if you're in that, you know, that setting that you have to protect yourself. But in reference to that, no, I don't think he's a bad guy to see toting gun and they're gonna paint a picture that he's a bad guy. And what I know about him as a person, he's pretty decent. Pretty decent, you know. But just to be in a neighborhood where you have to have a gun, little parts of Georgia, I mean, you have to have a gun. You know, that's the way life goes. In some places you don't have to have a gun. So, you know, I know he can fight. So if somebody knows you can fight, they're not gonna want to fight you straight up like they did back in the old days. Get a square one off and, you know, shake hands and he's done. These cats shoot at each other. I guess you get caught with, caught without it. You know, that's just the society to live in. You know, it's just
so
what it
your
is.
Experience,
Macedonians go out to the family too as well.
Thank you. And from your experience dealing with kids and adults, have you ever had any of this type of stuff go on in your community that you had pro boxers involved with gun violence?
Yes, ma'am. I had one of the top guys. And I felt kind of bad to start hanging with the wrong crowd. And this was one of the top guys in USA Boxing. I mean, won all the nationals. And yep. He got caught with them. He did 3 years. And I should have kept my foot on his neck and said, yo, sit him down south. Said, look, you got to do something, bro, because you got too much talent to let it go to waste. And D.R. Richardson, you know what I mean? I raised him up from a little kid to a grown-ass man, and I felt so bad that he turned, you know, he turned his cheek and hang with the wrong people. You know? Come out of jail, he started doing the right thing, he turned right back and did it again. It can be in a system to hang people. Then you got other people that are designed to throw you off track. If you know I'm doing good, why would you want to mess with that? But then I have some kids that feel good with the police officers, doctors, and I got a couple of dentist assistants, stuff like that, you know, that came out of my program. But I had a couple that get anything to do, you know. But you won't get with a bad apple try to fix. But now you got a good job, stuff like that. You know, but
what type of advice do you give some of your young fighters about conflict resolution?
Well, you always go me. It goes back to broken homes, the parents, the father, the mother. You know, if you got a mother that's 16 years old and don't know nothing about life, you got a grandmother that's 32, that's not going to try to fit in and help him. It's got to be a family. And I'm only one person. And I can take a group of kids and just try to do what I got to do to help them. Like, I got a program right now. The kids go that don't have money. But I'm going to tell them, you can't come to the gym. Turn my back. They can't go to the football program because they got to pay for that. So what I do, I just try my best to do what I can do to help them. But you have a lot of parents that's not parents, that fathers not fathers. I could be the mother and the father to a lot of kids. I was the mother and the father to a lot of kids. I took kids on their first airplane flight, going to the Nationals. It cost me a lot of money, but it paid off because some of those kids are doing real good right now. Just the other day, this lady come up to me. She started crying. I said, well, what's the problem? She said, you don't be doing me. I said, no. She said, I tried to sell you some tapes. It was real cool. Me and my daughter, we have to work out. And you let me stay in the gym. I said, that sounds like something I would do. She said, I'm doing real good. I live in Texas now, and I work for a law firm. I said, wow, that's good. And my daughter always asked me about, how's that guy doing up in Newark? And that really messed me up for a minute. I'm a hardcore guy. I'm like, that really touched me a little bit. So stuff like that, you sit down and think, wow, I'm not going to shut my door to nobody if it's cold outside. I just tell them. I said, I don't know. I came in one time. A friend of mine, he comes in the gym. I said, well, you can stay because it's cold. I came back and he had all these people laying on the floor. I didn't know none of these people. And you're snowing outside, freezing. I couldn't throw them out. It's not my nature to do that. So I said, yo, we ain't got no drugs, no guns in here, bro. I'm good. Don't do that. So in the morning they leave, and at night they come back. It cost me, so they start grilling in the wintertime on the grill. I can share with you that's going to Newark, New Jersey. So now they made me the district leader. I helped a lot of people. I helped a lot of kids. They can't go to the recreation center because now they charge to go to the recreation center. I'm going to stop that.
Your phone is breaking up just a little bit.
My phone breaking up?
Yes, just a little bit.
I'm going to stop. It should be right now. Let me see. Okay, it should be right now. I'm going to spot. If it's a possibility,
okay, that
sounds a little walking to any kid off the streets in Newark to do right, I'm happy.
So when you say that parents are not being parents, Do you feel like a single parent home can't do it for these kids and they need two parents, or the father needs to be involved in that child's life when it comes to, you know, grooming them and growing?
Well, that would paint the picture a little better if the father was here, because you got some strong women. I'm not talking about no black, white, green, or purple. You have strong women to take care of their kids. But you have some young ladies that's taking care of kids that can't take care of kids. They're leaving with anybody, just go out because they want to party and whatever. When you put yourself in a position to have a child and not do what you're supposed to do at a young age, don't know what to do, and you have a mother that's a grandmother that don't know what to do, say, well, you know what? It's not mine. I saw that before. I saw it and I was like, wow. This is crazy. Yeah.
Well, do you feel like it's important, like in the boxing community, is it important for a father to be in his son's life? Even more so than a mother?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just good if the father's there. You know, I could take an example of Shaq, met him a couple times, and Shaq mother, she was single until she ran into another guy, and he did a damn good job. He's from Newark. Kimizi Akiki, I know him personally. He came through Newark, but he went back to New York. He had a single. His mother, just him and his brothers. He was a fighter. Marlon Hayes, his mother raised him. He was a good fighter. It's just hard for a parents today, parents, than it was yesterday's parent. It's a difference. Because these kids today they're not really being 100% knowing what to do. I have seen times where a guy get ready to fight, they'll shake hands after the fight. Today, they want to shoot you.
So because you came from a different era of people. So do you think that era now is more aggressive because they're angry about their childhood, maybe?
Well, it's going back to what I said before in reference to knowing what to do and knowing what not to do. When you're dealing with family, if family not teaching family what to do, like grandma, big mama will tell you, hold baby, wait a minute, you don't do that now, don't go over there now because it ain't right. And if you have a father figure, or you got a father, says, son, Let me sit you down and talk to you. Daughter, let me holler at you because this is the birds and the bees. If that's not in your life and you chose to do with the girl doing what she's not supposed to do, and you hang with her or you hang with him, you're going to get what's on the streets. They coming from a broken family, they can break somebody else's kid just like they are. You know, take this package and go sell it for me. You know what I mean? You got, what I saw coming up is so crazy. It's like, wow. But I can look back and say, how many kids did I save from doing that or doing that or doing that? Just like the lady. I don't remember this lady, but she said I helped her through the winter. Okay, fine. I can tell you about four kids came out of my gym that's police, doctors, and lawyers. It's that little love that I gave them, gave them that little boost. And some of them didn't have a father in the house. You know? One of them was a, matter of fact, one of them was a foster kid. Yeah. John, him and his father was a dead John Thompson.
You think the system actually raises kids?
Well,
you think when a kid goes into the system actually breaks them?
I can say it does. I can say the system breaks them. They get confused. When you get confused and you think you're doing something right, and all of a sudden, just the bottom comes out of it, kids don't have no choice but to reach on to Joe or Malik or whoever else. They want some Timberlands. They want this. And they say, I'm going to show you how to get it. And that's what they do. I never met so many kids in games before in my life. I know a lot of them. That's what they chose to do. And I pulled a lot of them out of the game. So, you know, yeah, I truly believe you need more guys like myself to put it on the line. So, yo, this is what it is, man. This ain't how you do it. You know? I tried my best to do the right thing by the kids that I have now.
So how do you feel about all of these nonprofits getting all this money for all these programs for kids to keep them out of trouble, keep them out of jail? Do you see much of a change with these programs?
I mean, I can't talk down to some of them, but I could talk down to some of them. Because you got to understand, if you're going to give me $50,000, $100,000, I got to show you what I did with it. If I could take $50,000 or $100,000, and I could take a whole half of a neighborhood and say, look, this is what we're going to do, that's a beautiful thing. But if they take it and they spend on diamond rings and watches and cars and houses and mess up the paperwork, that's bad, you know? And like right now, I'm upset because when you got to go to a recreation center that the city of Newark owns that you got to pay, go in there to bring your child in there. I'm not saying it's after a daycare center or nothing like that, but I'm saying if you're going to have your child go in there, I don't think they should have to pay. Mm-mm. I got kids in my gym right now. I know they don't have no money. So how are they going to pay? I'm not going to say no. Because you always got that diamond in the rough. You never know who's who. But my heart is to keep them out of trouble.
I know a lot of kids look up to you. Something just dawned across me. You know, I used to own buildings in East Orange, New Jersey. And I remember there was a challenged kid that used to sell drugs in my building. And I would always chase him out. And one day he got really angry because I had the police remove him. And long story short, he broke the window out of my car. I wasn't in it, but I was told he was the one that did it. And I ran into him a few years later on Sunset Avenue. And I said, "Don't I know you?" He said, "Yeah." He was actually standing in front of your boxing gym. And he said, "I'm changed now." And I said, "Are you really?" He says, "Yeah, I'm boxing, you know, thanks to Mr. Charlie Dewdrop." And I was so shocked that this was the kid, and I mean, this kid had to be about 13, 14, selling drugs back then, you know, in 98, without a mother, just basically living on the streets. And I remember him telling me he changed his life and how you gave him a chance. And that meant a lot to me because I knew this kid came from a troubled life prior. Mother on drugs, walking up and down William Street. This kid had to see this. So eventually his only outlet was to sell drugs to feed himself every day. You know, so actually knowing that he came to your gym, I don't know who introduced him to boxing, but that's where I ran back into him at. And I was so shocked to see that this kid had changed his life. So when you say that you meet him through all walks of life and you take care of him and groom him, that is the one kid that I do know that didn't have a mother or a father. He had a mother, but she was out there. You know, I don't even think she knew she had a son that was out there. So I just want to say personally, thank you for all of your great accomplishments, for taking on these children, you know, using your own money. You're not even, you know, getting any money from the government to say, hey, you want a meal? I'll feed you. Need a place to stay? I'll house you. I got an extra bed. You know, you don't find too many people, and I'll say this, that even own boxing gyms today, except for one other gentleman, that will say, you need somewhere to stay, you can stay here until you get yourself together. And he would actually let them stay in the boxing gym, you know, until they got themselves together. So I would like to commend you personally for being the person that you are. And I know you have your own children. You know, your son was a pro fighter at one time. And, you know, seeing him grow from a small kid and grooming him, you know, you have that father's instinct of taking care of somebody else's child, and not even just somebody else's, but your own, and giving them what you exactly would give your own child. So I would like to say thank you so much for that. And I'd like to say thank you for coming on the show today. And if we have somebody that has any questions, would you mind coming back on again at a later date?
Yeah. I would be more obliged to come back on. And you just brought tears to my eyes because that kid, you was just talking about, everything just came to me as you was talking. Yeah. That kid's doing real good right now.
I think you know the kid I'm talking about.
Yeah, I know the kid. He's doing real good right now. I just didn't know why his heart was hurting, that's all.
Yeah, and I would like to maybe one day run into him again if you can hook that up. Because I'd like to see his growth. And I know that he'll know exactly who I am, you know, and do something special for him. Because it took him a long time to get where he had reached by the time he got to you. And if he hadn't gotten to you, I could bet my life we would have found him on William Street between Lincoln and Ashland, probably behind one of those buildings. I could bet my life on it because that's the life that he was into.
You're right.
So I like to thank you, Dewdrop, for coming on today, and we'll be in touch with you to come back on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you, and have a good evening.
All right. Thank you.
Bye now. Guys, isn't that something? He remembered. I brought tears to his eyes because this is a factual story, you know, of what happened. And to hear that I reminded him of that young boy. You know, I've seen a lot in my lifetime of being a building owner, dealing with the public, especially in my career. I've seen a lot, a whole lot. And I mean, heart-wrenching when it comes to these children that people just carelessly have, when you can just drop them off to a safe place and take good care of them. You know, and remembering this 13-year-old boy that actually found his nest, you know, at Dewdrop Boxing Gym in Newark. That really told me at that point when I ran back into him that there were angels looking out for him. Because when I tell you this kid had a rough life, he had a rough life. And, you know, there's some other things that happened to this kid, you know, in the hands of, you know, his mother's boyfriends that were really tormenting when I found them out. And I had to have a reality check. I had to say to myself, this is a kid that's been abused and neglected. And his day of survival on an everyday basis was, listen, miss, I know you own this building, but I need to sell drugs because I just need to eat today. And when he said that to me, I'll never condone selling drugs. That's not what I'm saying. When he said that to me, I decided to give him money every day so he could eat, even after the fact that he broke my window out in my car, even after the fact that he was selling drugs in my building hallway. Even after all of that, I still said, I want to make sure this kid eats every day. I can't imagine a 13-year-old young man out here in the streets. And I knew something was wrong with the kid. I knew that he wasn't hustling for, you know, the OGs. I knew that wasn't what was going on. Because I looked in this kid's face, and I remember the day that I actually called the police to remove him, because I said, there's a juvenile, and I'm very concerned because he is a juvenile. You know, I remember the tears in his eyes, and I couldn't understand why. And he said, I'm just hustling because my mom needs to eat too. And when I saw his mom coming up the street that particular day, she was running because she couldn't believe now her source of eating every day was being removed. And I felt bad that I had to do that. You know, I felt bad. And I'm so glad that someone had to take this kid in, clean him up. And as you heard Charlie Dewdrop say, listen, I was that guy. Because I remember this kid telling me he was even sleeping in the boxing gym. And I was so proud of him, even though I knew that he needed a mother and a father. But like Charlie Dewdrop said, I was their mother and father. And it takes a lot for a man to take care of a child that's not even his. He has no affiliation with the mother, because you usually get a stepdad somewhere down the line. But this man, he stepped up to the plate to be a father to someone's child that got left behind. And I'll honor Charlie Dewdrop until the day I die, because we share a common interest, and it's that young man. And when I get to see that young man, I'm going to bring him on the show because I want you to hear his story. Guys, it's been a fabulous Tuesday. Whoa, it's a really fabulous Tuesday. We have 14 million listeners on this line from the East Coast to the West Coast. So glad you guys could join in. This is Tommy Torres signing off. See you next week. Same bat time, same bat place. Have a good night, guys. Bye.
You're listening to It's Confirmed with Tomiko